Hello, everyone. You're welcome to another interesting edition of Sports Africana, where we talk about everything that has got to do with sports as it pertains to Africa. We like to celebrate our successes, tell our stories, and talk about our talking points. And as you know, Africa is usually without any sort of problems, be it administrative or anything. We like to talk about everything, but bottom line, we like to celebrate our heroes as well. My name is Oba Adeola Amokubo. Today I'm going to be taking a trip to the world of basketball. As you know, the FIBA African Men's Basketball Championship just ended, and Tunisia reasserted their dominance by winning the title back-to-back. And of course, it was a very good one, and every basketball lover enjoyed it. Remember, you can always listen to our podcast in all the podcast directories, such as Spotify, Deezer, Apple, and many more. All you just need to do is type in Sports Africana, and it's going to come up. Right, today we're going to be looking at basketball, particularly in Nigeria. The Nigeria participated at the Olympic Games, and it wasn't too good a performance overall, both for the male and the female team. During the preparatory aspect of the Olympic Games, Nigeria played Team USA and Argentina, and that got us got Nigerians to some sort of height, in the sense that everybody was hopeful that we're going to perform very well at the Olympics. But we were surprised by the result. And not too long from now, the FIBA African Women's Basketball is going to commence. But we're going to discuss all that. And to discuss that with me this evening, wherever you are listening from, could be morning, could be afternoon, it's a basketball expert, a Nigerian basketball expert. I have so much respect for his knowledge of basketball. It's no other person than Femi Adefeso. Wow, Femi, thanks for joining Sports Africana.
Thank you for having me. I always look forward to being on the show with you, so it's exciting. I must say I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be on Sports Africana today.
Thank you very much. And trust me, there are loads of people that listen to it across, particularly in Europe. You know, most of the people I try to target are Nigerians or Africans abroad. So they would be able to get the in-depth details of basketball. Now, basketball is one sport that is gradually, I would say it's gradually getting traction. And I would probably go as far back as 2012, when it seems that we started having a steady rise. Now, to say we started having a steady rise, we need to put some perspective. We are talking about internationally, even though a basketball league is something much more to discuss much later.
Yeah. But in a state of comatose.
I wouldn't want to put it that. Let's say it's just being revived.
Okay.
Just to put it nicely. But it's been, like you rightly said, it's been in a coma for at least close to about 4 years now, to put it nicely. But we'll touch on that most likely later. But I want to focus on the international aspects of the basketball team. Right, pre-Olympics, the team obviously qualified for the Afro Basketball and the Olympics Championship, and both male and female team qualified. A feat that probably was the first time to achieve by an African team to present both male and female team. Now, let's take it a step at a time. What would you make of our preparation to the Olympics from both the male? Or let's take the male first, because that's the one that seems to get a lot of people asking questions. What would you think the preparation was like towards the Olympic Games?
I mean, in fairness, I think we had a very solid preparation. I was one of those guys who was worried before the Olympics was moved, to 2021 on the short space of time that we had, considering the fact that we just ousted Coach Alex Mora and brought in Mike Brown. And so it was, I think, a little less than 3 weeks for him to put together a team. But God so good, COVID came. He gave us, you know, a better chance of preparing. And in fairness to not just this administration, the MBBF generally, they have a way of ensuring that we are well prepared, particularly for the international tournaments, which is Olympics or the World Championships, where we go on training tours based on some partnerships that we have and sponsorship. Because I remember there was a time we were fond of going to the Stankovic Cup in Asia, so if you remember.
China.
The peak deal came, we're playing some little tournaments here and there. And of course, we always start our Olympic version in the US, either in Orlando or in Oakland. And we play all of these friendlies going to it. Because I remember on the road to, if you remember the road to 2016 Rio, we played the US national team as well.
Yeah.
We played China on our way there. I think Australia. Argentina, beg your pardon, not Australia. Argentina as well. And in our build-up, just get us some games, you know, before that tournament. So we prepared really well, you know, with camping the guys out there. Although I for one, was not so impressed with the bogus number of players. 49, if you recall. I was what Coach Mike Brown called. And I was one of the few people that questioned it then. That why do we need 49 people? We are going to the Olympics, we should be able to just call it a sizable number, maybe 24, 26, you know, team or 22 or less, you know, so that we can concentrate and, you know, but the reason we're giving was, we're going to create two teams for the national team. One will go to the Olympics, another will go to the Afro Basket. Okay, so it made sense. And we accepted that. But we saw the same core of players preparing during the pre-tournament, the Olympics. We saw the youngsters coming through. Even a couple of Americans wanted to naturalize to play for us as well. Morrison, and this man got injured, Spencer Dinwiddie, so he couldn't come to the training camp. And we had a host of names like Festus Ezeli, who had not showed up, you know, the training camp before now. Interestingly, he came through. So it was really interesting that, you know, we've attracted, and of course, it's based on the performances we've had. Let's not forget, we had a very good performance at the 2019 World Cup in China, where we earned the tickets under Coach Alex Mora. So I think that tournament gave a good PR for the D-Tigers. So it was more like, it was now attractive to all comers. Now, this team has qualified for the Olympics. I want to be at the Olympics. Maybe I just try and play for Nigeria. I thought that was what Spencer Dinwiddie was trying to do when said to come on Twitter to do it. But our preparation-wise, that team, you know, was well prepared. I think it's the same for the women's as well.
Right. Before we go to the women's, talking about the preparation, before then, why did you think, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I like Coach Mike Brown, but why do you think that they couldn't continue with College Alex Wara? I personally was very impressed with what he has done from 2017. If you remember very well, prior to the Afro Basketball in 2017, Coach Alex had to put his team together within the space of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Remember?
2 weeks in fact.
I'm being conservative. If you remember, I didn't think we stood a chance of even going as far as we went. And we got to the finals. And if you look at the qualifying series to the World Cup, you will notice that he used different things at different points in time. And he got us to China, the World Cup, and he got us to the Olympics. Let's put it that way as well, too.
Yeah.
So why do you think he was replaced? You know, I personally felt, again, we know it's always good to have quality, and Coach Mike Brown is a quality coach. He's established, we know that. But why do you think Coach Alep, where was that, replaced at that point in time, considering the fact that he did all the work?
My personal opinion, I think it was for non-basketball reasons. It wasn't technical. And why I say it wasn't technical was the fact that what you need from a coach after every game is his ability to think and adjust. And I haven't lost to Russia. If I recall very well, I think that was the first game. We lost to Russia. Then we played Argentina. That Argentina game, of course, we knew we were really punching a little bit above our weight. But we gave a good fight. And then we were able to pick the last game. I think that was against Korea, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You could see the adjustment it was making game by game. And once we realized that, look, okay, we are out of the World Cup, we are not going to go far, let's go for the Olympic ticket, there was a change in the dynamics of things. So I think Coach Alex Morar is a very, very good coach. Maybe he needed some extra hands and some little bit of help on the bench, but I was not one of those who was really excited about changing him. So I'm on that same boat with you. Quite honestly, I didn't like the fact that I was taken off, because I also think chemistry is important in team sports.
Yeah,
you know, when you have the core of a team that is already gelling and playing, let's not forget, you know, the team was already disrupted. We just mentioned that we had just 2 weeks to put that team together to the Afro Basket. Mind you, in that 2 weeks, he got to the final.
Yeah,
he took us to the final of the Afro Basket, losing to Tunisia, who were hosts. And they lost in the semi-final in the previous tournament, which we won. So they had a statement and a point to prove in front of their own fans, because they were not going to lose two tournaments back-to-back. And so they beat us in that final. I remember Ike Ijeoku playing the best basketball I've seen him play. He was the leading scorer of the tournament. He was the most valuable player, despite the fact that we lost. He was, I think, the top rebounder as well in that tournament. So for a losing team to have all that accolade given to one man, number one, Ike Ijeoku is an undoubted fantastic leader. And he's been the leader of that team, you know, even as far back as 2012, when Olumide Adeyeji, you know, was still the captain. They did the leadership roles together and they played really solidly. So we managed to disrupt already, bringing in Alex Morar, because Coach Wilfoy did nothing wrong for him to have been ousted. I still think he's still our best coach.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
I would like to interview with Coach Wilfoy. What I like about Coach Wilfoy was how he was able to get the best out of it. He was able to get the players to believe so much in him. And
right,
the values and the traits. Can you imagine an American coach telling his team to lay the national anthem? I was shocked to see Al-Farouq Aminu sang that with so much pride as well, too.
Right.
What do you think?
I was fortunate to be in Tunisia for that tournament. And you are spot on with that. So not only did he enforce, that was the first assignment he gave to the players. Everybody must learn it, including himself and his backroom staff. So his goal was to, first of all, fully immerse himself in the Nigerian culture. Be Nigerian, go to the Afrobasket from a Nigerian perspective, so that, you know, they could go all out and win it. Because we had never won it. We've been nearly men. You won't believe, with all the talents we've had, we've never won Afrobasket prior to 2015. So that was the first thing, a cultural shift. And that's how you know someone who is really interested in doing or achieving something great. So he didn't come in as, it's just a job, it's a contract, one of those things, let me just come to my job and go. No, he wanted to do something really meaningful. And he started with the players. And I will be honest, that wasn't perhaps the most talented of all teams. But he was able to grind them. Let's not also forget, I like to, you know, go back to that. We also were missing Ike Ijeoku in 2015. He didn't play throughout that tournament. He was a non-playing captain because he was battling with an hamstring injury that just never wanted to go. And so he was on a day-to-day, okay, we play the next game. Before you knew it, he played the entire tournament without Ike Ijeoku. You know, but he was really influential on the bench. And Coach Wilfoy did so well. He had plans for the national team, but because of, you know, the back and forth with the leadership, you know, it was done away with. Then came Coach Alex Morar, who sort of, you know, filled that void very quickly and stabilized the ship. And it looked like we're going somewhere until we just got, I don't know, some people say it's our typical nature in Nigeria where we like foreign things. So the name Mike Brown, no disrespect to him, he's a quality coach. He's coming from, you know, a very fantastic program. He's even been the NBA coach of the year before. I think when he was at the Cavs, when he led LeBron James. I think that was his rookie year, his sophomore year, you know, to the finals. At that time, so he's a coach with a good pedigree, but I think we just messed up the chemistry of the team, because we're building something. Some players were going, some were coming in, we're right in the middle of good things. Akutari Tomura wasn't doing any bad. I mean, he gave us his son, for example. I don't think, I still say it for free, that I don't think we'd have had the opportunity of having Jordan Nwora on that team if we didn't have a Coach Alex. But look at what Jordan has turned into in the short space of time that he's come with scoring those points. Even at the Olympics, for me, he was our most outstanding player, even though he wasn't part of, you know, the build-up to the Olympic Games. Well, he was consistent and he showed that. And he's an NBA champion now, to add to that. So I wasn't particularly excited about the fact that Coach Mike Brown came, even though he was going to bring quality, and I believe in the quality he was bringing, because now he's in charge, so we have to support him and hope that he will bring what he could bring. But you look at it, the inexperience on the African scene showed, FIBA tournaments also showed, because it's very different from the NBA. A lot of people don't understand.
Before you go on to that, I'm glad that you mentioned the inexperience at the FIBA competition, which the Olympic is, and the Afro basketball. Yeah. I was very, very hurt when he left out our experience and some of our experience, and it brought in, I mean, if you look at our roster, we have about 8 NBA players on that roster, which I don't think is bad in itself. But when you take out someone like Ben Uzo, you take out someone like Ike Diogo, you mentioned earlier on, you said he was a leader. And that was one thing that was majorly lacking. No disrespect to the players that came, but I couldn't feel that passion, that hunger to die on the court compared to the previous teams that played, the team that won the Afro Basketball, or that even went to Rio. Look at this guy, Shane Lawal. He broke his leg at Rio, and obviously he never recovered. It was never the same after Rio. Eventually, he had to retire. Right. We didn't see that. So, why do you think he left out the experienced players, Ike Diogo, Ben Uzo, then to some extent Ike Irogu, who was very experienced and is a very so what do you think?
But to quickly correct what you said about Shane Lawal, he actually tore knee ligaments. It wasn't a fracture, but it was a career-ending injury because he couldn't come back to it. And he was having the time of his life playing for Barcelona last hour, but he just couldn't make it through. So I think Coach Brown was more particular about having NBA players on the roster than having experience on the roster. So I think that was his perspective. Because you looked at all of these guys, they were all rookie sophomores. Josh Okoge, Jordan Nwora, Precious Achiuwa. These guys have not even gotten all that experience in playing in all of those tournaments. There was a reason why Argentina still brought Luis Scola, even at 41, even the entire tournament. But he was one of the better players. Same thing, even Pau Gasol came to. The old players, but you still need people who understand how to play at that level to be there. The competitions are different. You know, it's 2-game season. It's 6-7 games, you are done.
Before you go on, I will tell you something. I listened to an interview by Ike Diogo. He went to Nigeria and I think was interviewing one of these radio programs. And he said something that highlighted the experience that we lacked. He was telling the host that during one of the games, he was telling some of the new guys that was introduced that, look, this is FIBA. It's much more harder. You're not going to be protected. You know, Palad, the new team from America, he was telling them that, look, they're not going to make a call for you. It's much more physical. We lacked those experience. What do you think, in addition to that?
Absolutely. We lacked it. Because these guys were not prepared for what they saw. That's pretty much what it was. And there was more touch. There was more physical contact. Even the American team struggled. Damian Lillard came out to say it after the Olympics, that this is tough basketball. I tell people that that's the advantage a player like Luka Doncic has coming to the NBA. The NBA seems a little easier. It's like 2 steps slower for him. Because he played big time basketball, you know, at Real Madrid, before being drafted, even with his national team, Slovenia, where they went to the Eurobasket as well, all the way. I think they eventually defeated Spain. And so you look at the fact that it is totally different. I would take it back on a particular scenario that happened in AfroBasket 2013, where I was also fortunate to be in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It was a game against Senegal. We lost in the quarterfinals by 1 point.
1 point.
Yeah, and Ben Wiesel did a teardrop that didn't go in. There was a particular play in that game, few seconds to go, where Ben Uzo held the ball and was calling a timeout, because that's what is obtainable in the NBA. You know, a player can actually call a timeout, but FIBA rules, you can only call a timeout when the ball is out of play. So they shoot the free throw, if they make the second one, the coach can call, look, a timeout after him. The ball goes out of bounds, the coach can call it, but only the coach can even call a timeout. So he showed his inexperience at that tournament, because, I mean, that was his first. And I'm sure he learned from it. And then you have players like that who have been through all of those rigors, all those mistakes. 2013, they went for the qualifiers for, you know, the World Cup. 2014, went to AfroBasket again, you know, in 2015. 2017, you know, played also, played 2016, played going to Rio at the Olympics. Those guys have been through cycles of those experiences, and they knew. And also, there was no ownership. There was no leadership on that team. You know, aside even, I mean, you can have a leader who is yelling, who is, you know, on the bench and is talking. I just give an example of Ike Diogu, who didn't play at all in 2015. A lot of people don't know. He was just on the bench, but he led that team. He was very vocal on the bench. He was cursing out guys. He was pushing guys. You know, he was saying all the things that needed to be said to his teammates, to ensure that they won that tournament, and they did win. But there was nobody on that bench who was there. And then we didn't have a floor general, which is a point guard who could, you know, control the game. You know, we usually say point guards are an extension of the coach on the floor. Nobody was reading the floor to say, okay, guys, let's chill, let's move, you know, let's manage the game. There were times where we had the advantage. We took wrong shots, false shots, Hail Marys. You know, we're shooting threes, which is not our strength. That was one of the things I faulted Coach Mike Brown for. This is a sports show, so I can use the example. I said I saw a Pep Guardiola in him, in the sense that your plan A isn't working and you're not ready to tweak. He was just, we're going to keep shooting. But we don't have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, you know, or an Harrison Barnes from the bench, or Sean Livingston, who are averaging, you know, over 36-40%. From 3-point range. But we kept on with that style that didn't work for us. Our defense was, on the perimeter, was quite lethargic, and we just couldn't react. And there was really nobody handling that. And that was why very easily a player like Ben Uzo would have helped us, because he is a very calm guy. You know, he's never in a hurry. His shot clock is there. He always says, I mean, you have a 24-second shot clock. If he touches, you have 14 seconds. If he touches the rim, take your time. Find the best shot. And that was what the likes of, you know, Australia, they did. When you watch them play, they were never in your... You see the Americans struggle with it, because they are the offense guy, isolation basketball, just give it to this guy, let him shoot, let him score. But you see the teams that go all the way and the teams that eventually win, they play good movement basketball, you know, the Greg Popovich kind of let the ball move, find the best shooter on the floor. It might not be your go-to guy, but if he's in the right position and he has the highest percentage, give him the ball. I'll just say this in passing before we move on to the next one, that even America's dominance has waned. I saw comments from KD and Green trash talking and saying, they're saying, you know, people are catching up, this competition is a lie. America won gold medal in Tokyo with the last possession. Gone are the days where they were blowing people out with 30 points, you know, 20 points, and we're all good. They had Kevin Durant. Still, they needed the last possession to beat France. And that tells you how much everybody is improving. And even Nigeria, on the African scene, which later reflected that if we don't keep doing the right things, if we don't prepare properly, if you don't get the right team synergy and chemistry together, others are working on their game. And that was what Cote d'Ivoire showed us. That was what Uganda showed us. Sadly, at AfroBasket.
Right. what do you, I mean, you mentioned something earlier on, which I picked on. The invitation of about close to 49 players, which it made sense if you're preparing two teams for both competition, that's the Olympics and the Afrobasket. Now, we now later realized that it seemed that on getting to Afrobasket, and I'm sure you remember on the platform that we both are, we're kind of agitated to know what the roster was going to be like. And when we saw the roster, we knew that, well, we have no chance.
We're in trouble.
So what do you, because I would have thought that some of the players that were not available during the Olympics would have made themselves available. I would have thought that some of the experienced guys that we had would probably be available, but they didn't. Now, I saw a video of Ben Uzo when he said, he made mention of the word that they were retired, and to literally summarize it, he felt a bit disrespected in how the situation was handled. And I brought this up on certain forum, and people were like, oh, that, you know, they should deal with it, it's ego and whatever, that kind of thing. Now, this is my opinion. You don't treat your veterans dishonorably, in my opinion. I personally felt that along the way things were handled probably wasn't the best. I'll give you an example, quick example. Back in 1994, before we qualified for the first World Cup ever, Steve Keshi was done. Now, I've known Steve Keshi for as long as I can remember. This guy was a leader. He was very good. I mean, he wasn't the best. He was not, in terms of central defense, he wasn't your typical John Terry. But Steve Keshi was able to organize, you know. Right. Now, prior to the World Cup, he had this injury in 1992, and he never really recovered. But Clemens Westerhoff still took him along because he knew the influence of what Keshi brought to the table, as a, and the players respect him. Now, do you think that as a result of Coach Mike Brown's omission of certain players, that was probably what led to some of them saying that, well, I'm not coming for the Afro basketball? I mean, we never would know, but from what Ben Uzo said, it seems that there's an indication along that line. What do you think?
Yeah, I it's one of the things actually I sort of faulted Coach Mike Brown for. I know this should fall in the lap of the Federation as well, but I mean, he is the coach. And why I said this is, the impression we're given in the beginning, I'd like to go to that, was two teams. Okay, so let's assume that was the plan. And so we're going to go to the Olympics. As a manager, not even as a coach now, as a manager, knowing fully well that we already said that some players will not be available because of NBA, even though that story can be debated on, can be argued, that some players will not be available because of the NBA, because already even the NBA is not started yet. Players are just walking into training camp to practice by themselves. So officially, it's not even opened yet. They're still trading and all of that. So which is why I said it can be argued. But let's even assume that's the case, that some could not be available based on whatever reasons. We already knew going to the Olympics that some players will not be available for the Afro basket. So why didn't we plan ahead? And I think what we should have done was simple. We know players that will be available for both, right? So let's have a mix of those that will be available and create a core out of them. 3-4 of them, whoever they may be, you know, and we keep them as part of the Olympic team so that when the rest go, there's still some sense of belonging, even as from a managerial standpoint, so that by the time you are going there, the new crop that comes in, you can infuse them into the culture you are trying to build. And even if they can't get through, you still have a core left that will carry you through the Afro basket. That was what I expected. But unfortunately, we had even a total overhaul of players that were not even in the original 49, by the way, because we had to even incorporate four local-based players on the basis of even their selection. I'm still trying to find out, because they haven't had basketball in the last 4 years. Okay, maybe the guys who played at the Basketball Africa League, Ikechukwu and Anthony Koko, fine. They played Basketball Africa League, okay, and they played, they should give a good performance. Okay, you can make a case for them. But the other two guys, you know, it's hard to make a case, but we understand that they had to put those guys in for very interesting reasons, which I would not say. But so you look at the fact that how we were able to have that void showed there was really
lack of
I'm trying to use the right adjective. Yeah, because we shouldn't have been blindsided by the fact that we're going to the tournament. And let's even assume that we already knew that some of these players would not be available. But it's also a question on even the players' commitment and character and to the national team. Because we know of these stories of how some of these veterans put in sweat and blood, sacrificed and put their careers on the line, their jobs on the line, the same jobs we're talking about, to represent Nigeria, even not with any glimpse of the fact that they were going to even win the tournament, but just because they wanted to represent Nigeria, you know, and they wanted to give. And I think that's where the art comes from, you know, for the likes of Ben Uzo and Co. The fact that, you know, they know what it takes, they've given their all, and they will do it over and over again. And then you leave them and you pick some guys who, you know, perhaps didn't think about it twice, and then you treat them that way, and then you perhaps want to call them back. And I told someone who was arguing about being entitled, I'm like, it's just pure human psychology. How would you feel if, you know, you were supposed to, you worked hard to be somewhere, and then you were let go of, and then all of a sudden somebody now makes you a second choice or an afterthought? You know, I mean, your immediate response will be, you won't be excited about the opportunity. You would now have to now weigh all the things you have to do together and decide, okay, is this thing priority? Do I have the opportunity? Do I have a chance? And if you feel something else is of more importance to you, you would rather do that than take it, you know, to be fair, as humans. And I think that's the situation with some of those other guys who were already hurt by the fact that, look, I think it's how we are treated. I tell people, it's not really about the opportunity, it's how we are treated. Because these guys have been to the Olympics before too, mind you. Some of them, two-time Olympians. So I don't think it's a case of going to the Olympics. I think it's a case of how that situation was managed and how these guys were treated and how they felt about it. That was why it was difficult, you know, to have some of these guys come through, you know, especially when, you know, they probably didn't have a nice relationship. And mind you, we also heard after even the Olympics that even some of the guys who represented us also didn't have a good time out there in Tokyo. And I don't want to speculate, but I have a feeling that also, you know, also played in the availability for the AfroBasket. I mean, if you could be available, you are not under any contract negotiation at the moment. The COVID protocols, I mean, you could still leave it if it's 10 days, if there was a good space of time to go, come back. I mean, now the season hasn't started, so if you're even going to quarantine, you have enough time to do and recover and do all of that. So I think all of those factors played out, and it's a shame that, you know, the coach and you know, the federation and everybody just couldn't manage the whole situation, and it just blew up in our faces from being victors over the almighty USA to losing to the lowest ranked team, you know, in Uganda at the AfroBasket.
Right. And talking about AfroBasket, now let's move to the ladies. I was so much expectant for the ladies. I'll be honest with you. I felt if there was any team that I think was ready to take the world, it was our ladies. And what do you think went wrong? Not to forget the fact that I think we missed Evelyn Akato at the Olympics. I felt we missed our energy and what she brings in. She's a silent leader. There are about three leaders in that team. Evelyn.
Yeah.
Ezine and Adora. Adora is the quiet, the most silent of the leaders. You know, they do their thing. They influence a lot of things in the background. And I thought they stood a good chance, particularly after watching the first game against USA. I felt they gave. I don't know. What do you think happened? Okay, you can go on. Just go on.
Okay. So it's actually tough. It's actually tough to speculate. Because also the women's game is also very interesting in the sense that a lot of factors play with how, you know, they approach the game or how they come out in the day. And I shared the same sentiment with you that I gave them even a bigger chance, you know, of getting somewhere closer to the podium than even the guys. Because very easily, we saw their performance at the qualifiers to the Rio Olympia. I said Rio Olympics, the qualifiers to the Tokyo Olympics. They played the US. You know, we saw how they played. You know, they had a couple of games. These same teams they played even at the World Cup. Let's not forget we got to the quarterfinals of the World Cup a year prior in 2018. So we're building some momentum after winning AfroBasket and then the exposure to all of these people. And we have a couple of players who play mainstream Europe in France. You mentioned Adora.
Atonye.
Plays also in France. Atonye, Yidifa as well. So all of these ladies, they're not playing in the back quarters. They're playing mainstream Europe, European basketball. And these are opponents that they meet either in the Euro Cup or in the Euro League or in the, you know, the Spanish League or the French League where we have a couple of players. So I expected more competition. But for me, as a fan now, I saw a team that only Ezinne was fighting. She was like, she was in her own world. And I saw the tears in that last game when we lost. And it resonated. That was when it really resonated that what I was thinking and what I was seeing was actually valid. No disrespect to the other players. I think they gave their all. It was not just enough. But there was something different about how Ezinne approached the game. So I think it was a mental thing. There was some level of maybe perhaps satisfaction of getting to the stage, becoming Olympians. It's the dream of every athlete in the world. And you know, the Olympic spirit, I don't know if truly it's a spirit, but it's like it's a spirit that participation, you know, is the hallmark. Getting to the podium is a bonus. And that's what they say. I've never been there, so I really can't. But it seems like that spirit, you know, just filtered into the air of the Tigress. And they were just kind of like, okay, I won't say they were overwhelmed. But I think they were just more or less satisfied with being there, enjoying the atmosphere, playing. You know, there was no extra push to, you know, let's fight like they did at the World Cup. You know, you could see this team was eyeing history and they wanted to and they achieved it, you know, winning those games and getting to the quarterfinals. But it wasn't the same. And like I said, the only player I really saw who had that extra, and it was Ezinne Kalu, to be honest. And I'm saying that with all modesty, with no disrespect intended to the other players on the team. And I think that was what was missing in the end. And that was the difference maker eventually.
Well, do you think that the supposed switching over from the Team USA to Nigeria, and in this case, I'm talking about Nneka Ogumeke and Chinny Ogumeke, could have been some sort of mini distraction because and none other person, I think Eric Williams. Elizabeth Williams. Yeah. So now bear in mind that if FIBA had cleared those three girls, that means some players might not have been on the team. Yeah. So do you think that could have contributed to that distraction?
I mentioned it was more of a mental psychological thing. So if we want to put that into perspective, then it's looking more like a yes than a no, to be honest. Because that would have played on their heads, the tactics, their teammates that would leave. And let's not forget, you know, the women's game is a little different. You know, coaches will tell you coaching women is not the same as coaching men. And to some extent, even though I also thought I didn't see why we were also so much about having these girls join the team at the time, because I mean, we had played so well to get to where we've gotten to. We got to the quarterfinals of the World Cup, for crying out loud. We were not blown away. We went to the qualifiers and we qualified. We played well in that qualifiers to the Tokyo Olympic Games. Yeah, we needed some extras to put some people in. Chinny Ogumeke was eventually cleared, but she was injured. You know, so why were we, you know, putting any free of things? For Nneka, I think reasonably it was far-fetched. It was far-fetched because Nneka was just at the qualifiers to the same Olympic Games, and she had played for the United States. Apart from that, you know, we came up with the clause that stated to improve
Basketball
in the country. No disrespect to any nation I'm going to mention, but we are not Benin Republic or Togo. that needs one player to improve our basketball. Our basketball is already at that height already. So that wasn't going to kill the ordeal of an argument in any courtroom at all. As, oh, she's coming to improve basketball. I mean, no, now, come on. You know, we are going to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. It's not Benin qualified, you know, to AfroBasket. We were back-to-back AfroBasket, defending AfroBasket champions. So that wasn't even going to say it at all. But unfortunately, I think it played a part in some way. Now she has to wait a four-year cycle, where that's NECA now, to be able to switch her allegiance. Well, I think since she has dropped her letter with the American team, you know, now it's clear that she will eventually become Nigerian. But by then, she's 31 now, if I'm not mistaken. Adding that to her age, she'll be older, maybe a little slower, but she'll be effective because she's one of the best players, you know, in women's basketball altogether. I haven't won the most valuable player in WNBA. But in answering your question, I think he played a part, to be honest.
And talking about FIBA, we went to the FIBA Africa and we knew what to expect. But what would you say? What would you say were one of two players that you think? I mean, I was quite impressed with Steven Domingos and Emegolu and Ogudinro. Those are the three players that I think that I was quite impressed with. But what do you make of that team, or who do you think could be part of the mix in the future from that team?
Yeah, Emelogu, for me, in all of them, I think he was no disrespect to the talent of the players, but it wasn't a very functional setup. So I want to believe a lot of those players didn't give their maximum output. They would have, if perhaps they had a few more players around them, or a few more talent and veteran leadership and tactics. Because it was also, let's not forget, these guys who didn't have training camp. They literally didn't. They just grouped themselves together and they went to the AfroBasket. And that was one of the statements I was trying to make on that group which we are on, Diola, that we cannot rely on that superior talent thing that we say we have. And so we want to run ragged over every other person. And Uganda gave us a wake-up call. You might have all the best talents in the world, guys. US, Nigeria has talent in all the leagues. But if you bring them in and you are not prepared, sorry, you'll be tested and you'll be pushed. And you saw, you know, the teams that got to the semifinals. It was just a clear, you know, case of teams who were prepared and had talent. Senegal were the most prepared team for this AfroBasket. It showed in the way they played. Unfortunately, they didn't get through to the final, but this was the closest they've ever been in terms of how well they were able to hold on. You saw the Ivorians as well, a well-grilled team that knew how to take care of business. And the moment they took us out, their confidence just went sky up, and they knew they could take out anybody. And I'm sure that was what helped them in that game against Senegal, as they were able to push through. Tunisia already is a team that, you know, has chemistry. You know, a lot of those players, you know, that are playing for Tunisia now started playing for Tunisia at under 18s. They were teammates playing under 18, the national under 18 national team for Tunisia. And these guys are close to their 40s now, 38, 36, 40. You know, so that's how long those guys have played together. So there's chemistry. And the interesting thing is they play in the same club in Tunisia. They are not traveling away. So even in their off-season, they are in the same club out there in Tunisia, you know, playing basketball together. So calling the camp is even non-essential because they are in camp throughout the year, you know, preparing for the AfroBasket. So that's very easy for them to do, getting in there. And I mentioned Senegal, you know, as the other team. So you look at it all together and it has now put a question mark on, can we rely on our superior talent alone? I feel like we can gather ourselves together last minute and just go to the maybe we were doing that in the past. Maybe it worked because we are good at fire brigade approach in Nigeria. But now, clearly, the gap is closing. You know, you are seeing the kind of quality all these teams are bringing up, including Uganda that beat us. I mean, anytime I say that, it punches a hole in my heart. You know, but I mean, Uganda actually beat us. And mind you, they now have a player in the NBA. Ismael Wayne, right? Who was picked up by Toronto Raptors. So Uganda has a player in the NBA, so you need to respect them. That's what it means, and that's why I'm very emphatic about Uganda now. And it's spreading around the nations. You know, Mali, spreading, look at Cape Verde. Cape Verde, another fantastic team. You know, the tallest guy there, his name skips me now. He was in the Cavaliers team that got to the finals, the NBA finals, losing to Golden State Warriors. Oscar Tavares, you know, the tall man, I think he's 7'1" or thereabout. You know, and you can see how he's grown. Now he's playing for Real Madrid in the Spanish Endesa. You know, so you see those guys too. There's improvement in their team. Cape Verde, who would have thought of them? You know, as at 2013, they were playing classification game against Nigeria, where Alex Morgan was their coach. Now they are getting to semifinals, looking like a team that could go all the way. So we really need to get our acts together if truly we want to dominate this game for a long time. Talent, yes, we have, but organization, we have to do a whole lot better.
And talking about getting our acts together, we all know the tussle that ensued between the present MBBF administration led by Engineer Musa Kida and the former MBBF chairman TJ Tidani Umar. Not until January this year January or February thereby that the court now overruled the case that has been pending for long. Now this where lies the problem for me. When we knew that the court case had been concluded before the Olympics, why were we not planning ahead for a full season league rather than a 2-week league, a 2-week abridged version league to present a representative for the Basketball African League? Now, I will tie this to another question, which is the defunct Kwesi League. At that Kwesi League, Nigerian basketball was about flying.
Yeah.
Before the old shenanigans came upon. Please, I wanted to comment a bit about the basketball on the local scene.
All right, so I'll start with the first part of why didn't we plan. The easiest excuse that could come up would be, okay, COVID. So we don't have the funds, it just came in now. But the truth is, once the national team program comes on board, everything else is thrown to the back burner. Now, that's the truth. Once the senior national team is on board, and it's not peculiar to just this administration, it's always been the thing. Once they come through, even though the previous ones have always had sponsorships and all of that, so they still manage to find a way to run through. But that has always been the case. And unfortunately, that's what happened. Now that COVID came, you say no sponsorship. And then national team now is in the frame. We need to go to the Olympic Games. We have to put all attention to that. I'm also one of the people who has stood on the fact that I really don't think that court case really held us back in real truth. I just think there was a lack of will from the Federation to actually put together some domestic arrangements. Why I say so is this. There was the President's Cup. Okay, there was no league, and then you changed the name to President's Cup, which, fantastic idea. You know, let's not be a void. Let's fill the void. So they came up with the concept of a President's Cup, a championship where teams will play. I agree there were some teams that were aggrieved that didn't show up, but we could have continued with that. We only had that once, and then the remainder of the 2 years, 2.5 years, there was nothing. And then the rhetoric was, in fact, there was no rhetoric. There was no story about court case. It was now this year, and when everything is almost gone, then we came up with that rhetoric again, say, you know, it's about, you know, the court case and about the court case. And for me, I don't buy it, because I felt we could have leveraged on the President's Cup that was created by the administration, which was good, a good way to fill the void. And we could have played it. So, and we could have played in different styles. It's about nomenclature. Okay, President's Club, we'll do Savannah, we'll do Atlantic. You know, we'll do different things and all of that. But rather, just like the typical Nigerian political system. Once one new administration comes in, you want to sort of overshadow the past one by bringing in something new. So we went the way of the Division 1, the total Division 1 and Division 2. And so it was more of pushing towards, oh, there's Division 1 and Division 2 sponsorship. It's never been done before. This is the first time and all of that. Good. But really, how productive was that? You know, how much was that pulling back, you know, into the conveyor that was fueling and channeling the movement of the basketball, of Nigeria basketball? You know, it wasn't seen. It was just a production on its own end, you know, achieving whatever it was built to achieve without supplying anything. So, and really, that was it. So I think it was more of, you know, a political move at the end of the day, where people just decided, you know, what, this administration, this is what we're going to stand for. Our Division 1 and Division 2 will be our hallmark, which was, I mean, great innovation. They got sponsored, fantastic. But then you left the void of the Premier League, and then we tie it to, you know, the rhetoric of court case, which I think didn't really actually do anything or such. And going back, you know, to the Kwesi League, which came about, the court case, the origin of the court case, is the fact that we had a league that was thriving. I mean, we had 20 million naira for as a price, you know, and you can go call these teams, Kano Pillars, Kwara Falcons, and the Bulls, if they got their money, and they got it. For the first time, I was fortunate to be on the media team that was covering, you know, the league. For the first time, we had matches being live, you know, in places like Kaduna, Kano, you know, Abuja, Lagos. It wasn't like everywhere in Lagos and then 2 weeks later. It was almost every fortnight. There was a game in Lagos, a game outside of Lagos. So all the teams were given an opportunity to be showcased. We're seeing new names like Michael Okiki, like Victor Komunibo, like Emil Agbabolaji. Those guys were young guys who they were becoming the stars, you know. And I tell people in close quarters that we've managed to throw away two generations of players, because I feel that those names I just mentioned, you know, in the space of 4 years would have become the prime players who would be the stars of the league now, and would have had one or two shots at getting to the national team, even if it's just a training camp invite. And that would have even raised the level of their game and given them opportunities to maybe find contracts outside of the shores of the country. And then we now have players perhaps would have been the next rookies who are in line behind these guys, who were also beginning to show promise of being those great players. But unfortunately, the void, you know, as taking, you know, the territory of those guys. So those guys, if they were, for example, 21 then, they're now 24, 25, they're in their prime and they haven't played active basketball. So they will need another 3 years to recover. That's now they'll be like 28, 29. How much more do they have left? And so we talk about competitive advantage and getting to the national team, no local-based player and stuff. These are the factors. And it's very easy to defend. There's no local league, so why do we can't call them to the national team? But you ask yourself, is the same people responsible for calling the national team that are responsible for the league? So which is why I think going forward, there needs to be a dichotomy. You know, the federation needs to separate powers as much as it is. I mean, it's like the English FA and the Premier League, for example. I can imagine if the politics was intertwined. So whenever the three lions were going to play, they would halt everything as they know. You know, you can imagine how crazy that would be. Or, you know, when the politics of the game begin to play, it's, well, maybe with FIFA, and then there's scandals and all of that, and all this will affect the PR, you know, the Premier League and the ability to push for sponsorship and marketing, trying to douse every wrong narrative. It's going to be difficult. So I even if we want to go forward, we need to separate those things. And I think that was what Kwesi was trying to do when it came into Nigeria. It was well spelled out. We want to develop basketball beyond the ordinary spheres that we know, which was maybe Lagos and Kano. Now we want to spread around. We want everybody to have a few. There was even a strategy to ensure that the major teams, which is something like the NBA and plus when you hear big markets, smaller markets and stuff, there was also a strategy in that line where the big teams that are the following would have more games live on TV. So they could also have an opportunity of showcasing themselves, not just, you know, to the fans, but also even their local markets, you know, business people can start looking at opportunities you know, to begin to affiliate themselves with the team, because there's now television exposure, not just even local to Nigeria, but on the continent. And another interesting thing I would like to note is Kwese was also ahead of his time, in the sense that the Kwese Premier League in Nigeria, as at 2017, were already streaming games of the Nigerian Basketball League. It was being streamed on mobile devices via the Kwese app. So now we are Netflixing a couple of years after, watching all the blockbuster movies. But Nigeria Basketball had set the pace, but we just didn't have enough to hold on to it, to make it something. So you can imagine people subscribing to watch those games and Kwese had the NBA and other sports content to it, and how much that would have been explosive in this market. You know, so it's quite sad. And I also need to add this, that Kwese actually waited the whole full calendar year for NBBF to get its acts together, both parties, so in order to just continue, because they had so much interest and belief in not just Nigerian basketball alone, but the Nigerian sports market and how the potential was there for them to grow something. And the investment they made in Nigerian basketball was really huge. You know, there was so much belief in it. And everybody bought into it. The stakeholders, the federation at the time, the teams, the players. I mean, the Final Four was great in Kano. We saw all the razzmatazz that went with it. People came in from far and wide. The stadium was full, packed. I mean, for the first time in a long time, we didn't play the Final Four in Lagos, which is a traditional home, which was cool. And the idea was to take it to different cities, just like, you know, we had the NBA All-Star game, where, you know, different cities will host. That was a plan, where, you know, different cities will host regardless of which team. As long as there was a market there, people will come out to watch, and there was the support, and there was the drive. You know, take the final there, take the teams there, and we have a good time, and we have basketball showing. But sadly, we wasted that opportunity because there was infighting. You know, the leaders just couldn't put their heads together to appear on things. And I think there was also a very wrong PR given to the Kwese League. Because I remember there was one morning we woke up, and I think that was the beginning of the end of the Kwese Premier League, where we woke up and a newspaper report said, you know, the Kwese League was illegal, and so no teams to show up. And that was in the middle of a league that was entered into the Final Four. So, and then you tell teams not to honor, you know, the final, the playoffs, just because there was a transition in power. I mean, I could understand if there was a tug of war with who was leading. But I think any right-thinking leader who put the game ahead of the position would have at least saw that thing through. Okay, show your presence. I mean, if you need to show your muscle, come to the final, stake a claim that you are a president, let both presidents be there. I mean, for me, if we were going to, rather than pour the whole meal away so that nobody eats it, rather let's all be on the table. Let's have a discussion, you know, or let's, you know, whatever it is. But none of the leaders, you know, looked at it that way, particularly, you know, the incoming one, which was the Kida-led board, because they felt they needed to take charge and take charge by force. So, you know, they went about it in so many wrong ways with the negative PR and narrative. And then we heard there were lots of threats and stuff. And that was what led to the court case, because now teams eventually went on to play the league, won the league, and it was time to qualify for the African Basketball Championship at the time. It was still called the African Basketball Championship before the Basketball Africa League came by the NBA. And then they were not recognized. So there was a small mini league over maybe about 3-4 games where Mark Mentors, Rivers Hoopers, and a few other PTs came. And then they selected, you know, who was going to represent Nigeria at the African tournament. And these teams felt, you know, aggrieved. Like you're taking their rights from them. And they decided to pursue their case via the law courts at the time. And then it was a case of, okay, stop the league until, you know, all of these things is sorted, which I still don't think was the best option, but you could understand the rationale behind. But I thought, right thinking, forward thinking leadership could have brought out a round table and brought everyone to sit down and address it out of court, like totally out of court. We didn't need to let this linger for so long. Could have been, you know, dealt with out of court, and we could have moved on. you know, or even if we move, even if we didn't, we, at least there shouldn't have been a void. Should have allowed the game to still keep going. Okay, you know what? We'll step away. We'll step away from this. Let's deal with this at this level. Let's allow maybe a nomination, maybe whatever it is, a caretaker committee or whatever it is to handle the running of the league while you guys face your federation and deal with the national teams. I think we could have still run, you know, the leagues and not lost everything we lost. Because at the end of the day, what we did also affected Kwesi's business in Nigeria and on the continent as a whole. And eventually, you know, they are no more here, and we might perhaps never get that opportunity that Kwesi was giving us again. Honestly, the way I see it.
Wow, that's so much information. Thanks very much, Femi. And in rounding up, the basketball, FIBA basketball, Women's Basketball League is going to start. And it seems that we might have our virtually full complement of our girls. What do you think?
I think for the women, it's our time. Like, we're in that era where we have a core of ladies who are not just talented, but they have a chemistry. They are a team who is well-knit, well-built together. I think it was from the transition of 2015 in Cameroon, after we won bronze and losing also by 1 point to Cameroon. Yeah, to Cameroon. I saw the fire from those girls, and I'm very honest. I think that was the turning point for the ladies. And a total change. There was a change in mindset. Because why I say so, it was evident in how we took out Angola in the top place match. If we go back to watch that team,
the fourth quarter,
Angola didn't make a single point. We totally annihilated them. And Angola was like one of the favorites. It was just, you know, one moment of error, and they lost, you know, in the semifinals to Senegal. In there, so it wasn't like they were a bad team. That was a solid team that was everybody's favorite to win, you know, the AfroBasket in 2015. And then we went to that top place game, and in the fourth quarter, we just went guns blazing. Like, these girls were on fire. Defense was ad knock, and we went on to demolish them. And the progression was instant when we went to the qualifiers for the Rio Olympics. And I think the federation at the time saw the fire in the ladies, and we were like, okay, you know what, we'll find funds. Let's go and try out to see if we can get the ladies to get to Rio and join the guys who had already qualified by becoming champions in Tunisia that year. And we went there. We lost to Belarus by, I think, 10 points, but it was a very close game. It was back and forth till we lost. And then we took out Korea, which was very impressive.
I remember the last shot.
Yeah, it's in the Kalu. And that was our announcement in the big stage for us on the national team. And from there, it's been going upwards in terms of trajectory. Then we went to the AfroBasket in 2017 in Bamako, Mali. Fortunate to be there as well. We went on to be defeated. Like, that was the fire. So we took that fire from 2015, you know, winning that game, and boom, went on defeated in 2017 in Bamako, Mali. Did great, went to the World Cup in Spain in 2018, got to the quarterfinals, the first African team to do that. Then we went back to defend our title again in Senegal, in front of their own crowd, defeated them in the final. That was another huge statement in there. We beat Senegal twice, by the way, because I must say that. And then, you know, getting to the Olympics, which is one of the reasons why I had so much belief and faith in these ladies, because it's the same core, it's the same unit. Yes, we're missing Evelyn, which was very, very big at the end of the day. I hope she'll be able to make that AfroBasket team this year. In Cameroon. I think we also have unfinished business in Cameroon. That should be also a motivation. Having lost in the same arena, which we hosted the games in 2015, where we came from. So I'm really excited about this call of ladies. I hope, you know, they can just ride on that disappointment from the Olympics and just move on to show that it's time. Like, this is Nigeria basketball's time when it comes to women on the continent of Africa. And we show that dominance by going three straight.
Thank you very much, Femi. And you mentioned Senegal. I've watched that final about three or four times, you know, and it's one of the toughest. And that game and the game we played against, I'm not sure if you remember, Mali in the semifinals of 2017. Yeah. That was a game and a half. those two games, I cannot forget them. You know,
classics.
You know,
classics. If we had a channel dedicated to sports in Nigeria, I wish we did. I mean, games like that are games that we need to show to the younger talents to see. Look, some people fight, like games are not, we need to imbibe the winning culture and the winning mentality. You know, sometimes big games actually test you, and it takes more than just your skill, but your heart as you're able to win games at that level. And that's what the stages did.
Well, thank you very much, Femi, for joining us on Sport Africana, for giving us an in-depth information, valuable information. And hopefully we hope to have you some other time in the future to talk about basketball.
Yeah, I'll definitely be looking forward to another opportunity. I'm excited. Finally, I got my debut. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. And there you have it. Until we come your way again, when we bring you another interesting story that is making the rounds. Have a wonderful day and stay blessed. Thank you.